number one, welcome to the Persuasion Call today. I'm not even sure the date. October 28th, we're getting close to Halloween if you live here in the United States. And this is the Persuasion Call. My name is Kurt Mortensen. Don't know if I mentioned that one. And we are talking about trust. So those listening in are doing replay. Just a quick reminder, it's been about 10, 15 minutes talking about the technique so you can apply it this week. Then we'll take your questions, the things you're running into, or about what we talked about today. So we've been focusing on the last couple of weeks as far as really understanding trust. So critical in real estate or whatever it is, especially in real estate. Doesn't matter how good your deal is. If they don't like you, if they don't trust you, there's no business, there's no deal. And we've talked about time and time again, I have to really hit this point home, is if it doesn't matter how trustworthy you are, it doesn't mean people trust you. We want you to be trustworthy. I'm glad that you're a good person, but that doesn't mean people automatically trust you. So the last couple of weeks, we've talked about the five C's of trust. We've talked about character. We've talked about competence. We talked about confidence. Last week we talked about credibility. And today we're going to talk about congruence. Those would be the five C's. Character, competence, confidence, credibility, and congruence are what we call the five C's of trust. Now, congruence is going to be really important because, as you know, people will believe your body language over what you're saying. And that's the critical factor. We have kind of a built-in lie detector where it just doesn't feel right. We don't like this person. A lot of times is that your gestures don't match what you are saying. And so your congruence can come back to your consistency, you know, your what you've done in the past. Do your words match your actions? And, you know, plenty of studies have been done with congruence, and it is amazing that people can pick up on different aspects of congruence. I think I mentioned the dental study where the dentists were told the patients that they were going to get something for the pain. It was a placebo, and the patient still felt a lot of pain. When the dentists were told it wasn't a placebo and it still was a placebo, the patients did not feel a little pain. Basically, I'll put it this way: one of the ones that was done was during the Korean War, and they ran out of morphine for the soldiers, and they gave them a placebo. Now, a placebo is, you know, it's fake, it's not real. And when the nurse gave the placebo, the soldiers did not feel much pain. And when the doctor gave the placebo, the soldiers still felt a lot of pain. What it came down to is the nurse didn't know it was placebo, and the doctor did, and we pick up little things in our mannerisms, and that's what we need to talk about, is understanding exactly how it works and comes together. Great persuaders are congruent. When things match, we don't notice, but if there's something off, it grabs our attention either consciously or subconsciously. You probably, when you look at congruence, I need to say it again, that your words match your actions. It's an agreement and harmony with what you do and what you say. The more consistent and congruent you are in every aspect of your life, the more honest and genuine you're perceived to be. If you believe in your message, you'll practice what you preach. If you practice what you preach, you become more authentic, and the doors of trust will swing wide open for you. When you possess congruency, there's no need to manipulate or camouflage your behavior. So you have to ask yourself, are you congruent with your last history, last time you talked, your last interaction? What is your reputation? Do your nonverbal behavior match your actions? Are your emotions congruent with your message? What are your audience's expectations of you? And it all comes to play. And remember, you guys can hit *6 at any time to mute yourself out because we're getting some background noise. There's a phone ringing right now. And *6 will mute yourself out and bring yourself back in. Thank you. Okay. Humans are natural lie detectors. They just feel it. When you attempt to fake congruence, they sense it. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, you know, that gesture, yep, they're lying. It's just a feeling that they have. Trust increases when your words match your actions. That is congruence. Agreement, harmony. If not, it's a red flag. It's kind of like this. When your clothes match, we really don't notice. But when your clothes don't match, we notice. And the same thing's true with congruence. And most incongruencies are found in our body language. And countless studies demonstrate that when body language is not congruent or in disagreement with our message, the body language will always be believed over the message every time. So let's talk about body language and reading people and understanding being congruent. Because you could probably be doing things right now that repel the people you're talking to. You could be doing things right now and not even know that it is an indication of deception. And that's important to realize. And we notice that people are more successful. Those that can read body language are more successful than those who aren't. There's a complete science with this. And we know women tend to be a little bit better than men in reading body language. Ladies, you've probably been on a date before, and you didn't like the guy after 10 minutes. You showed him all the signals, didn't like him, didn't want to hold his hand. And at the end of the night, he still tried to go in for a kiss, because sometimes guys don't see the body language. On a college level where they would show pictures of students, different pictures of different emotions, the students that could pick out the emotion, they followed them for a while, had better relationships, stronger marriages, made more money, were more successful, learning to read people. And it's also been coined the word emotional intelligence. If you ever read the book from Dr. Daniel Goleman, he talks about how emotional intelligence is more important than our IQ. He calls it EQ. That is a huge indicator of success. That's what's important. So let's go over some nonverbals that you should be aware of, not only in yourself, but in other people. Again, some things you're doing could repel the people that you're talking to. Let's go over a few of these that you just learn to read people. Now, one that you need to be aware of as a persuader, whether it's network marketing or real estate, whatever you do, is rejection. What do people look like when they're rejecting you or rejecting your message? And someone who logged on the last 2 or 3 minutes, we're getting a hum or something. If you hit *6, that would be great, so we can keep the line clear. So when someone's rejecting you, how do you know? Well, let me give you a few of the things you're looking for. Now, as I talk about body language and human nature, and even when we teach detecting deception, you're looking for what we call clusters. You're looking for two or three things that indicate that this is what's happening, whether it's anger or rejection or deception. Just because they touch their face doesn't mean they're lying. Just because they look away from you doesn't mean they're lying. But if there are two or three things, it's a good indicator that they are lying. So when someone's rejecting you, what happens is you tend to get very short answers. Very short answers. Their eyes will drift a lot more. You'll have less eye contact from them. They'll start looking at different things around the room. Their shoulders will get angled. What that means is, and this is important when you interact with people, how do you know if someone's disconnected with you? When you've connected with someone, their shoulders are squared up with you. Their feet are pointing towards you. But if there's any rejection at all, where they're done with you, you'll see their shoulders start to angle. You'll see their feet turn away from you. Happens almost every time. So if you're talking to someone maybe in a foreclosure situation, you want to try to keep your shoulders squared up as much as possible with them. If they keep turning their shoulders away, and they don't even know they're doing this most of the time, that is a sign of rejection. You might see their hands clenched, their lips get a little tighter, their arms might get folded, might fold. Those are things you're looking for. And when someone's in rejection mode, you have to ask yourself as a persuader, what do? Well, you've probably blown it to this point because they're rejecting you. The only way to try to salvage it is to have a question ready for them that will bring them back. Now, that rejection, it might not always work, but you could say something like, well, what does the perfect solution look like to you? Or if a genie appeared and made everything look perfect, how would that look like to you to get them to start thinking, to get you past the rejection? The next one, which is very important, especially those that are doing real estate and dealing with an emotional thing like a foreclosure, is how do you depression. Now, the interesting thing about when someone's in depression, there is no deception. They'll tell you how it is. They'll tell you how bad they feel. They'll tell you exactly what's going on. There's no cover-ups. So as a persuader, that's almost a good thing to realize that they're going to tell you the truth. It's hard for anybody to go through depression, but you'll notice that their chin will drop quite a bit. Their eyes will look down quite a bit. Their shoulders will slump. Their corners of their mouth tend to be turned down. You might hear quite a few long sighs to kind of really understand depression. Now, when someone's in depression, the only thing you can really do is give them a little hope. And let's talk about foreclosure. Now, many of you are working on foreclosures. Give a little hope. Say, you know, this is a bump in the road. Let's fix this. Let's get some equity out. Let's repair your credit. Let's get you, you know, in 10 years, 5 years from now, this is, you know, something you look back on and have I'd want to fill in the blank there, is something that you can work with them on that. So that's depression. That's very important to be able to read. Now, anger. Anger is an interesting one. You got to be very, understand the emotion of anger, because you'll see it out there. And a lot of times, if you're knocking on a foreclosure, for example, they're going to blame you. It's going to be your fault, because with anger, you're trying to project it on somebody else. Remember, anger is a secondary emotion. What they're yelling about you about is really not the main thing they're angry about. So with anger, it's the opposite of depression. Their head will tilt up, their chin will come up a little bit, and you'll see this in the animal kingdom also. You'll see more squinting in their eyes. You'll see their jaw muscle tighten. Angry people tend to fold their arms a lot higher than the average person. You're grinding the teeth, finger pointing, are all signs of anger. So you have to ask yourself, okay, when someone's angry like that, well, first of all, we need to understand we don't want them to do these gestures during our presentation, because that might subconsciously repel people. But when people are angry, you have to ask what you do. What are you supposed to do? There's a couple things. One thing that I like to do is a distraction. You could go for a walk. You could do something different. You have to understand, when people get angry, the blood leaves the brain, and they're not thinking straight. One thing, I was out monitoring a negotiation, and the two people were there ahead of me, and they were arguing with each other. It was getting pretty heated, and I walked up the stairs. They didn't notice I was there. They kept arguing. It was getting more and more heated. They still didn't notice I was there. And there was a box on the top of the stairs, and I kicked it down the stairs. I went all the way down the stairs. And they stopped, and they looked, and they watched it. They looked at the box. They looked at me. But it was enough time as a distraction to kind of get some of the blood back in their brain to realize that they were out of control. It could be taking a break. It could be talking about something else. Sometimes with anger, the worst thing you say is, well, you shouldn't be angry. That's like telling a child, well, you shouldn't be scared. Well, but they are. They're angry. It doesn't matter if it should or shouldn't be. They are. Maybe you can get angry with them, find a common enemy, which could be the bank or the economy or their boss. That's very helpful at times. But be very careful with anger that you're able to read that. That is anger. The next one that's very important to you to be able to read and that you don't do is indifference. Indifference means you've lost them, they've tuned out, they're just being nice, they don't care what you have. Indifference. You'll see their eyes tend to droop a little bit. You might see tapping on the desk, arms behind their neck. They tend to squirm a lot more. And probably the biggest indicator of indifference, whether it's your teenagers or someone you work with the foreclosure with, is their facial muscles hang. They tend to look a little bit older. Their facial muscles hang, meaning that all the emotions have left their face, and so there's nothing really happening. They look older, their facial muscles hang. That's what you're looking for with indifference. And that's another one, just like rejection, where you need to have a good question in your pocket that you can ask them to see if you can bring them back. Because they're done. They're done. They're just waiting for you to leave. Those are things. Now, on the opposite note, how do you know when they're interested? We know that one of the big complaints with persuaders is that you tend to talk too much. In fact, the number is 3 times too much. Which means most of the time you're over-persuading, you're talking too much, and you say so much, you're actually persuading them not to do it. So you need to be able to read the person. Now, if they're leaning forward, if they're mirroring you, if their eyes start to sparkle, their head nods up and down a little bit, their voice sounds interested, the responses get easier, they're answering more questions, then you know it's time to shut up and ask for their business. If they say things like, yeah, we'd probably put the piano there and the place that would go over there. Okay, it's done. It's time to seal the deal. People are so afraid to ask people for business that they talk too much. It sucks the energy out of the presentation, and it scares people away. So you need to be a good judge of human behavior. How do you know when it's time to shut up and ask for their business? Another one you probably want to be looking for is confusion. Understand in the world of persuasion that a confused mind says no. Let me repeat that. A confused mind says no. Now, here's the ironic thing, is they're not going to tell you they're confused. They don't want to look stupid. Here in the upcoming lecture, I'm talking about ego and esteem and how that relates to persuasion. Just like in a college class or any type of class. professor says, are there any questions? And rarely does a hand go up. And when, especially when people are completely confused, rarely will a hand go up because nobody wants to look stupid. So if they're confused, they will rarely admit it. And the way you can gauge it is their mouth will tighten. You'll see their mouth tighten up quite a bit, though, kind of like it's puckering. You'll see a puzzled look. Most of that's coming from their eyes squinting. You might see almost a slight scowl on their face. Again, they're not going to admit it for the most part. Now, let's talk about real estate. This is true, especially even with network marketing. If you're talking about some terms and things that might make perfect sense to you, but they're going to confuse the average person. They've never talked about it before. They've never heard it before. You might be asking them to do something. They don't know how to do it. Remember, confused mind says no. So your goal as a persuader is to make sure you ask questions along the way to make sure they understand. And if any time they ask you a question, you say what? You say, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for asking the question. And then you save their ego. You say something like, you know, that was my fault. I should have explained that better. You know, that's all me. And thanks for bringing that up. That opens the door for more questions and helps them understand. You never want to make them feel stupid. I know you never mean to, but that's a big complaint. You're coming across as arrogant. You're trying to make them feel stupid. I know you don't mean to do that, but when we talk about congruence and working with people, sometimes we come across that way. So when they're confused, make sure they feel open and welcome to ask questions, and you're grateful that they've asked the questions, and it's your fault for not explaining it perfectly, even though maybe you did. But with great persuaders, you check your ego in at the door. It's not about your ego. It's about the paycheck. That's important to understand. So that's a critical key. And the last aspect of the five C's of trust is congruence. What I would recommend is that if you could record yourself giving a presentation, I know it's painful, but that will kind of look to see how congruent you are. If you want to practice with this, I would, not that I recommend TV or anything, but if you were to happen to watch TV or watch a movie, turn the volume completely off and see if you can read their gestures and their body behaviors and their emotions, especially if you've TiVo'd it or it's recorded. Maybe watch the 10, 15 minutes and see if you can gauge the emotions, then go back with the audio to see if you got it right. That's another powerful way to learn how to do it. So record yourself. Get some feedback. I know it's painful, but that's a sign of greatness. Everyone has different things that we can work on. If you can record yourself giving a presentation, that's powerful. If you're only doing it over the phone, record that too. Listen to that. Are there incongruencies in your voice or your energy and what you're saying? Is it coming across as somebody that they can trust? Go a long way for your success. So that's our final C of trust, congruence. A subtle thing, one we don't think about, but the main message here is you could be doing things, even though you're not lying, even though you might not be indifferent or feeling confused, sometimes we have gestures that tend to repel people. Remember, every gesture you have will either attract or repel the person. Does it match your message? And that makes a big difference in the world of trust. All right? With that being said, are there any questions about what we talked about today or the last couple of weeks or things you're running into now? Now is your time.
What would be the repelling gestures example?
Well, if you give somebody the bird,
yeah, that's obvious.
I wouldn't recommend that. Let me just go through a few. Okay, that's a great question. What I've noticed, especially when I train people to do presentations, persuasive presentations, a lot of times what they'll do is what they do with their fingers, they'll clench their fists. And so you have to be aware if you're talking to someone, when you get nervous, especially in a large group, you might clench your fist. That would be one. I think the biggest one that you can work on this week is when you stand up, you take a look at your shoulders and your hips, okay? That is a safe zone for you to move your hands. If at any time your hand ever comes above your shoulder, that gesture repels people and makes them very tense. Does anybody know why?
Are you, like, invading their space or being too aggressive?
Well, we'll talk about proximity. This one's not about space, although that's one we need to talk about. It goes back to childhood when a father father raised their hand above their shoulder, what did that mean?
You're about to get it?
You're going to get it. Now, here's the interesting. When you're, they're not saying, oh, my father did this, it makes me tense. They're not even thinking about that. They just feel uneasy. And so that's one you'd be aware of. Just move your gestures from your shoulders to your hips. Now, that you talked about space, the science with that's called proxemics. That's the study of space. When you invade somebody's space, that makes them very nervous and uneasy. In the United States, we need about 24 inches for a stranger. South America, it's 18 inches. In the Middle East, they like to feel your breath. Okay? And if you've ever seen a North American and South American talking together, it's quite entertaining because the North American keeps backing up to get the space back, and they don't even know they're doing it, and the South American's scooting forward because that's what they're used to. But that also could be if you're going into someone's office and touching things on their desk or getting too close to them. So be very careful with your proximity. At least give them a couple feet, or maybe even a little bit more when you first meet them. Even when you come in and shake your hand, you might want to back up a little bit because it makes people a little tense and uneasy when you do invade their space. Touching your face would be one that would, another one for a lot of people. That's one of the signs of deception, would be another one that would be one of those triggers that kind of repel people. Does that help?
Yeah, thank you very much.
You bet. Next question.
Hey, Kurt, I have a question with regards to making a live presentation in front of a group of people.
Okay, go.
In terms of some of that body language you're talking about, what kinds of things would you discourage if you're standing up in front of a room? You know, is slouching, for example, acceptable, or, you know, you want to look professional?
What type of group is it? Is it a professional group?
Yes, it was a business networking group. I gave a presentation to yesterday.
Yeah, of course slouching would be out. The big ones, and again, this is what I do with a lot of people. We look at their videotapes and we analyze it. And the big, I'll just give you the big blunders. Now, you want to look confident. Now, if you're giving a longer presentation, it's more relaxed, you might want to do something. I would get away from the podium. I hate podiums. And get in front of the group. Now, the big mistakes we're going to see just off the bat that will hurt your presentation, first of all, are vocal fillers or decrease your credibility. That's a big one. Hands in your pocket, don't do it. You want to make sure that you have a neutral. Now, what I mean by that is, for some reason, and I don't know if it's a weight thing for some people, a lot of people will make a gesture and they'll bring their hands back in front of their stomach. You know what I'm talking about? And then they'll gesture again, and they'll bring them back to their stomach. If you're going to gesture, that's great, but you need to bring your hands down to your sides. That's a distracting mannerism. Another one, too, is the fig leaf. Does anybody know what the fig leaf is?
No.
Can you guess what that is?
You're covering yourself.
Yeah, you're basically, you know, it's a fig leaf. You're covering yourself. It's just not a very confident stance. There's the front fig leaf. There's a reverse fig leaf. A lot of people tend to wash their hands, play with their hair, play with their ears. You make your gesture, you come back to neutral with your hands on your side. You make a gesture, bring it back. Don't wash your hands. Don't pull your fingers. Those, from a beginning standpoint, would probably be the biggest ones that I see that need to be fixed right away. And here's the big thing. We talk about vocal fillers, these gestures. Most people have no idea. When I counted 22 vocal fillers, like, really? Because a lot of times we don't know. And here's the hard thing, because, you know, I speak professionally for a living, and I will fix something, and I'm excited it's fixed, it's out of my presentation, then I'll watch a videotape a year later, and it's back. So it's kind of the recording and watching yourself is a lifetime pursuit, because sometimes the things you fix will creep back in, and you have to fix them again.
You know what, Kurt, the vocal fillers is an interesting one that you mentioned, because I tape-recorded my presentation. And I wasn't aware of it, but I sure as heck used a lot of ums and, you knows, and I was wondering, how do you guard against that?
Okay, great question. The first part of this battle is being aware, okay, which now you are. You have a challenge with it, which most people do. The thing is, you're also doing that when you talk to people on the phone. You're doing that when you're talking to people one-on-one. And the reason our brain does it is our brain, for some reason, doesn't like silence, and so the way our brain thinks, we think in segments or chunks of information, and we go from chunk to chunk, we throw in just to throw in some, while we're going to the next segment. So what I would recommend, when you're on the phone or just talking to people, in a less stressful situation, be aware of the words you're using and catch yourself on the vocal fillers. What's going to happen is you'll start catching yourself after it happens. And then you'll start catching yourself right before it happens, and it'll give you an opportunity to fix it and be aware of it. Understand, if you're doing it in a public setting, you're also doing it one-on-one or over the phone, and that's a time where you have more chance to think about it and fix it.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. You bet. Any other questions?
Kurt, pauses are really effective in that also. Just stop and think before you
Absolutely. They call them pregnant pauses. I don't know why, but a pause brings people in. It's, you know, it emphasizes a point, but it also gives you a time to not use vocal fillers, and it also, you have to realize that pauses are okay. They're okay to use. It's okay to have a little silence. In fact, in persuasion, you've heard, the first one that talks loses, and so silence at times is a pretty good thing to have, because when you're a good interviewer, some silence in the right part is going to get them to talk more and more about what you need to hear. Point. Any other questions out there?
I missed last week's call. Is there some way I could get it on recording or something?
Are you a nice person?
Oh, of course.
You bet. Here's the website. It's persuasioniq.com. persuasioniq.com/Kurt, KURTCALL, Kurt Call. That'll get you, I think, in the last 4 or 5 weeks are posted there. And if there's any requests that you guys want to talk about in the upcoming weeks, I'm more than happy to focus on those. Next week I'm going to focus on, because this came up, we get a lot of information that is we talked a lot about borrowing credibility last week and getting the right type of testimonial. How do you ask for testimonials and what needs to be in a good testimonial? We'll talk about that next week, because that's a great way to borrow credibility. And a lot of people aren't doing that the right way. And when you can do it the right way, it gives you a lot more trust and credibility. But after that, if you guys want certain things you want to focus on, I'm here for you to help you out. That's what it's all about. There's no set schedule or things we need to talk about. So if there's certain topics, you let me know. I'd be more than happy to address those. So any other questions out there? All right. So we'll talk about that next week. We'll focus a little bit more on the credibility and getting testimonials, what a proper testimonial looks like, how to ask for it, the best way to do it, and that'll be powerful to you, because that is going to give you instant credibility and increase your trust. So everyone have a great week. Have massive success. Write down any questions that you run into. That's what we're here for. And we'll talk to you next week. Good night, everyone. You're so welcome.
Kurt.
Good night. You bet. We'll see you.